Chapter 10. I Want That Ship. Warmaster. Stowaway. Horus returned to the bridge. As the tomb ships closed on the orbitals, he'd retired to his personal chambers and left the observation of the coming attack to Malagust. The Strategium was a large space, airy and vaulted, but with the return of the Warmaster arrayed in the full panoply of battle, it seemed cramped. Nor had he returned alone. Falcus, Kyber, and 20 of the Justerian carrying breacher shields came with him. Kyber's helmet hung at his belt. His face was a picture in rapture. Such a change from the bitter resentment he'd worn when the Warmaster removed him from the assault elements. Now he was going into battle at the Warmaster's side, and no greater honour existed within the Sons of Horus.
"You're still set on doing this, then?" asked Malagust.
"I want that ship, Mal," replied Horus, rolling his shoulders in a clatter of plate to loosen the muscles beneath. "And I'm out of practice."
"I counsel you again, sir. You should not do this."
"Worried I'll get hurt, Mal?" asked Horus, lifting Worldbreaker from his belt. The haft of the mace was the length of a mortal man, lethal against a legion foe, absurd overkill against baseline humans.
"It's an unnecessary risk."
Horus slapped a mailed fist on the Widowmaker's shoulder, a booming clang of metal that echoed through the Strategium like rolling thunder. "I have Falcus here to protect me," said Horus, unhooking his battle helm and hauling it down onto his gorget. The lenses flared red as its auto-senses were activated. Malagust felt a tremor of awe travel the length of his twisted spine. Horus was an avenging angel, an avatar of battle incarnate, and the master of war. So terrible and powerful. Malagust was horrified his quotidian dealings with the Primarch had rendered the miraculous almost banal. "I've sat on the sidelines for too long, Mal. It's time everyone remembered that this fight is my fight. It will be my deeds that ensure it's my name that echoes down through the ages. I won't have my warriors win my war without me." Malagust nodded, convinced the moment Horus had secured his helm. He dropped to his knees, though the movement sent a jolt of searing pain through his fused hips.
"My lord," said Malagust.
"No kneeling, not from you," said Horus, hauling his equerry to his feet.
"Sorry," said Malagust. "Old habits."
Horus nodded, as though people kneeling to him were an everyday occurrence, which of course it was. "Bloody the spirit for me, Mal," said Horus, turning and leading the Justerian to the embarkation deck where his Stormbird awaited. "I don't expect I'll be gone long."
"This is it. This is what I missed." "Tomb ships!" hissed Admiral Semper, seeing notations on an instructional primer from his cadet days writ large in reality on the hololith. "Throne, bloody almighty, tomb ships! They're fighting the subjugation of the moon all over again! The thrice-damned bloody moon!"
The hololith told a tale of horror, of a plan in tatters, of arrogance, and ultimately death.
"If it had been anyone else but the Sons of Horus, I wouldn't have believed it," whispered Semper. "Who but the Warmaster would have the audacity to launch a full quarter of his fleet into the void and hope they arrived in time and at the right location?"
Except, of course, the Warmaster hadn't hoped the tomb ships would arrive when he needed them. He'd known with a certainty that chilled Semper to the bone.
"The orbital platforms are gone,"
said his Master of Surveyors, hardly daring to believe the evidence of the hololith. Semper shared the man's disbelief.
"They're worse than gone. The enemy has them," he replied,
watching as the most powerful platforms, Var Crixia and Var Zerba, cracked open the orbitals that the enemy assault forces hadn't seized. Var Sohn had launched, and was still launching, spreads of torpedoes into his hopelessly scattered fleet.
"Is the day lost, Lord Admiral?"
The answer was surely obvious, but the man deserved a considered answer. The Lord Admiral swept his gaze over the catastrophic ruin of what had begun as an ironclad stratagem. He laughed, and the nearby Thalax rotated their torsos at the unfamiliar sound. Semper shook his head. He'd forgotten the first rule of war regarding contact with the enemy. Semper's rightmost battle group was no more, every vessel gutted by treacherous fire from the captured orbitals.
As the warships foundered in the wake of the shocking reversal, the Death Guard surged into them like ambush predators picking off herd stragglers. Alone and overwhelmed, each Imperial ship was brutalized until it was no more than a smoldering ruin. The crippled hulks were then driven into the gravitational clutches of Moloch by snub-nosed ramships. Wrecks plunged through the atmosphere, blazing re-entry plumes followed them down. Semper had traced the trajectories, hoping against hope that the wrecks would hit the atmosphere too sharply and burn to ash before reaching the surface, or be too shallow and bounce off, careening into deep space. But whoever had calculated the angle of re-entry had been precise, and every missile of wreckage was going to strike Moloch with the kinetic force of heavy battlefield atomics. The Sons of Horus swarmed the Adranus, its Nova cannon useless at close quarters, and its broadsides unable to hold off the raptor packs of Thunderhawks, Stormbirds, and Dreadclaw assault pods slamming into its flanks. With its escorts crippled by the orbitals, the Dominator was easy prey and was being gutted by vultures. An ignoble death, a bloody death. The Dominator was going down hard. Screaming voxblurts told of thousands of Legion warriors and things of howling darkness ripping it apart from within. He'd ordered the vox shut off, the screams of the Adranus' crew too terrible to be borne. Only the center yet endured. Admonishment in Fire had been maneuvering when the first assault teams hit the orbitals. Its captain ordered an emergency burst of the engines, which undoubtedly saved her ship. For now. Its lance broadsides had demolished Var Uncad and reduced it to a smouldering ruin. Solar's glory was ablaze, but still in the fight. With the destruction of Var Uncad, it had been spared the full force of the fire intended to cripple it. A handful of light cruisers had weathered the swarms of torpedoes, but none were in any condition to take the fight to the traitors. At least six would be dead in the void within minutes, and the remaining four could barely maneuver or muster a firing line. There would be no crossing the T this day.
"Yes, the day is lost," said Lord Admiral Semper. "The rest is silence."
Five Stormbirds flew the flaming gauntlet from the Vengeful Spirit on an assault run. Four streaked forward to take up position alongside the fifth. They peeled away from the War Master's flagship as its vast engines fired, maneuvering it towards the mighty form of Guardian of Aquinas as it swung in. The two flag vessels were closing like champions in the crucible of combat, seeking one another out in the midst of slaughter. It would be an unequal fight. The Vengeful Spirit was old and tough, its marrow seasoned and its blackened soul ready to taste blood. Collimated blinks of light streamed between the two ships, high-energy pulse lasers intended to strip shields and ablative coatings of ice. Deck after deck of guns boomed silently in the void, hurling monstrous projectiles through the space between them. In void terms, the two warships were at point-blank range, two swordsmen too close to use their main blades and reduced to stabbing at one another with punch daggers. They moved in opposition like stately galleons, sliding through clouds of molten debris and listing wrecks with impunity. Bright hurricanes of light streamed back and forth, explosions, premature detonations of intercepted munitions, crackling arcs of squalling, scraping void shields. Hull plates buckled and blew out as both ships traded blows like punch-drunk pugilists. In their wake, streams of molten debris and shimmer trails of frozen oxygen glittered in the star's light. The escorting Gothics attending Guardian of Aquinas came in hard beside her, the admonishment in fire and the Solar's glory hurling thousands of tons of explosive ordnance at the Vengeful Spirit. The War Master's ship shuddered under the impacts, but it was built to take punishment, built to bully its way through harsher storms than this. The Endurance came in low, oblique, shadowed by burning orbitals and pulsing reactor detonations. Its prow weapons savaged the admonishment in fire and crumpled its hull as if with a fiery sledgehammer. The stricken ship's gun decks burned and its weapons stuttered in the face of the Endurance's assault. It kept shooting even as the Death Guard vessel rammed it amidships. Millions of tons of iron and adamantium moving at speed had unstoppable momentum. The Endurance's reinforced frontal ram ripped through the weakened armor of its target and drove its gray bulk through the very heart of the admonishment in fire. The Gothic simply ceased to exist, its keel shattered and its exposed interior compartments raked by unending broadsides. The wreckage spun away, spiraling clouds of flash-freezing atmosphere blooming from its shorn halves. The Solar's glory, already ablaze and choking on its own blood, had already stopped shooting and its rear quarters vanished in the light of a newborn star. A reactor breach or deliberate overload, it didn't matter. A white-hot sphere of plasma bloomed from the vessel and engulfed the flanks of the Endurance. Almost as soon as the fiery explosion flared to life, it began to diminish. An inverted hemisphere was gouged in the Endurance's hull, and intense oxygen fires burned with raging intensity before the void snuffed them out. Any other vessel would have been hopelessly crippled, left wheezing and dying by so grievous a wound. But even more than the vengeful spirit, the Endurance was built to take pain. Damage control mechanisms had already sealed off the ruptured decks, and it heeled around to rake the engine decks of the Guardian of Aquinas. Lord Admiral Brython Semper's flagship was a gutsy fighter, and though it was ablaze from prow to stern, it kept hurting its attackers with murderous broadsides. Through burning fire decks, its master gunners whipped their choking crews to load one last salvo, one final shell, one parting broadside. Guardian of Aquinas was doomed, but the killing blow would not come from without. It would come from within. Two of the gauntlet-running Stormbirds were obliterated before they began their attack run, simply swatted out of existence by the blitzing storm of detonations filling the space between the grappling warships. Another had its trajectory fatally altered by the close passage of a torpedo, sending it into the hot zone of laser bursts, where it immediately exploded. The final pair swooped low over the topside superstructure of the Guardian of Aquinas. They weaved evasion patterns between close-in defense turrets and barrage lines. Raptors on the hunt, they flew almost suicidally close to the gnarled structure of Semper's flagship. The hull breach behind the bridge was exactly where it was expected, and both Stormbirds flared their wings as vectored thrust suddenly reversed to match their forward velocity with that of the Guardian of Aquinas. Assault ramps opened, and streams of heavily armed warriors dropped from their troop compartments. Terminators, breachers, and assaulters, hard fighters all, and equipped to fight in the kind of war Space Marines were bred to win. Brutal, close-quarter, barging blade work. Blazing scrum fights of bolters, stabbing blades, and full-contact blood work. First into the Guardian of Aquinas was the War Master. Bolter shells hosed the 10-meter transit in horizontal spears of fire. The shooting was disciplined. He'd expect no less from warriors of the 13th Legion. Horus felt the hot breath of near misses, and the kinetic force of their passage battered the plates of his armor. Shields hunched before them, scraping the deck. Sons of Horus breachers advanced through the banging fury of the defense. Explosions and gunfire rang from the walls. Metallic coughs of grenade detonations filled its volume with scything shrapnel. To Horus's left, Falcus Kyber fired his combi bolter over the edge of his shield. A Terminator hardly needed a shield, but Falcus hadn't brought it for his own protection. "Malachus does love to nanny me," Horus had advised the Widowmaker in the instant before launching the assault. "Keep it for yourself." Never one to gainsay an order if it stood to keep him alive and safe, Falcus had done just that. The defenders were coming at them from all sides. Ultramarines to the front, a mix of carapace-armored stormtroopers, army and Skitari to the flanks. The Justerian advanced in a salient wedge, pushed out in a segmented formation of bolters, blades, and shields. Chain-gun fire pummeled the shields, and beam cutters sliced through them in white-edged lines. Even Terminator armor was vulnerable. A powerhouse of armored might, the only thing that could resist a warrior encased in tactical dreadnought armor, was an identically equipped warrior. Or so Horus had thought. Argonadu went down. The hero of Ulanor bisected through the chest by a sizzling beam cutter that left a nasty stink of cauterized meat. His killers struggled to reset their weapons, ratcheting cranks and pumping charge bellows. Horus raised his gauntlet-mounted bolters, their proportions outlandish to any other, but perfectly suited to his Primarch scale. A continuous stream of shells briefly linked muzzle flare and target. The beam gunners exploded in a confetti of shredded, scorched meat tissue and volcanic blood. The Skitari launched an assault into the flanks of their advance. The heavies came first, combat orgs with grossly swollen musculature who wielded motorized saw blades and pole arms with photonic edges.
"Where left?"
shouted Kyber, and the Justerin on the edge of the formation halted and braced for impact. Skitari were hellish fighters, chosen for aggressive, almost psychopathic tendencies that could be yoked by cybernetics. These were, if anything, more feral than any Horus had seen. Warriors of the Wasteland, post-apocalyptic killers, reminiscent of the barbarian tribes Horus had last seen as stasis-preserved specimens of pre-unity. Bedecked in fanged amulets, furred cloaks, and scaled breastplates, they charged like men possessed. A Terminator was a tank in humanoid form, more a war machine than a suit of armor. Only the very best could adapt to its use, and only the best of the best fought alongside the War Master. A volley of combi bolters soared into the Skitari. A dozen fell, two dozen more came on. They slammed into the Terminators in a flurry of roaring blades and unsubtle firearms. High-load shells exploded against bonded ceramite and plasteel, corroming from deflective angles and ricocheting wildly. Kyber waded in among them, shooting the head from the nearest Skitari killer. His shield bludgeoned the next, caving his face to a fragmented pulp of liquid flesh and bone. This was the work Kyber loved best. Batter kills, armor blows. Feeling the blood spray your visor, feeling the bones break beneath your fists. Horus left him to it and jabbed his clawed fist at Hargun, Ultar, and Parthan. "Keep the right clear," he said. "They'll come from that side next." His words were prophetic. Cloaked in power fields, iron bucklers, and photon disruptors, blue-cloaked warriors of the forlorn Spartax threw themselves at the sons of Horus. Despite himself, Horus was struck by admiration for the Spartax courage. Transhuman dread could freeze even the bravest warrior in place, but they came anyway. Ultar swung his rotor cannon to bear, and the deafening bray of its spinning barrels filled the transit. Hargun chugged shells from his combi bolter. Power fields shrieked under the hammer blow impacts, and photon disruptors were no protection against the detonation of the fat shells. Parthan broke formation and closed the distance far faster than anything his size ought to be able to move. A shield wall could only hold for as long as it remained solid, but rotor cannon and combi bolter had broken this one open. Parthan went in, head down, like a battering ram, striking left and right with his oversized fist. Crumpled forms were hurled about like refuse, bent in ways no body was meant to bend. They shattered on impact, leaving bright red spray patterns on the wall. The Spartax fought a thing that could not be fought, tried to kill he who could not be killed. A dozen fell to Parthan's fist, then a dozen more. They threw themselves at him as though eager to join their comrades in death. The warrior of the Justerin waded through blood and bodies, trampling them to gory mud beneath his armored boots. Gunfire and blades tore at his armor, tearing the ocean green paint from its surfaces, but doing no harm. On the opposite flank, Kyber's warriors were having a harder time against the Skitari. Cauterized fear centers blunted them to the terror of Terminators. Implanted aggression boosters made them wild. Horus was mildly surprised to see two Justerin on their knees, armor carved open, and wet organs flopping out onto the deck. He hadn't seen that, hadn't incorporated it into his plans. After Ulanor, many claimed the title of War Master was simply a recognition of Horus's rank within the Great Crusade, a bellicose thing fit only for the purposes of conquest, something to be set aside when the fighting was done. To his lasting regret, Horus knew better. War Master was not a title. It was what he was. The flow of battle was music to him, a virtuoso performance that could be read and anticipated like the perfect arrangement of notes. Battle was a chaotic, unpredictable maelstrom of chance, a random imbroglio where death played no favors. Horus knew war, knew battle as intimately as a lover. Horus knew what would come next as clearly as if he had lived it before. Now! Parthan's rampage was ended as a coruscating beam of hyperdense light struck the back of his armor. For an instant, it played harmlessly over the blood-matted plate. Then the Justerin's armor buckled as though an invisible giant was crushing him in its fist. plates ruptured as a rising whine of building power split the air over Parthan's screams of agony. A thunderclap of discharge, and Parthan died as he imploded at the subatomic level, and every particle of his being turned inwards and crushed by its own mass. Shattered plates collapsed as though the man within them had simply vaporized, and Horus smelled a stink wind of misted blood and bone. A beat, as the Justerin struggled to comprehend what had just happened.
"Altar!" shouted Horus. "Rapier platform! Conversion beamer!"
The rotor cannon turned on the gun carriage. Ultar walked his shells into it and reduced it to scrap metal.
"Now they'll come," whispered Horus, and swung Worldbreaker from his shoulder.
He kept the weapon moving. Even for a being of his stature, it took time to build speed and power with so heavy a weapon. A warrior with a transverse crest of ivory led the Ultramarines. A centurion. Visor tags identified him as Proximo Tarkon, and Horus assimilated his available service record instantaneously. Ambitious, honorable, practical. Gladius, of course. Energized combat buckler on the opposite arm. Bolt pistol, expected. Tarkon fired as he ran. The 30 Ultramarines at his back did likewise, maintaining their rate of fire even as they charged.
"Impressive," said Horus. "You do my brother much honor."
Two Justerin nearest the charging Ultramarines went down, carefully bracketed by the warriors in cobalt blue. With enough mass reactives brought to bear, even tactical dreadnought armor could be penetrated. Return fire punched half a dozen Ultramarines from their feet. Armor cracked open. Flesh detonated. Horus didn't give the 13th Legion a chance to fire again. Without seeming to move, he was suddenly among them. Worldbreaker swung, and three Ultramarines exploded as though siege mines had detonated within their chest cavities. A copious volume of blood wetted the air. The flanged mace swung back again, one-handed, low on an upward arc. Another four warriors died, their bodies slammed against the walls with bone-shattering force, their outlines punched into the steelwork. Tarkon came at him, Gladius arcing towards his throat. The haft of Worldbreaker deflected the blade. Tarkon kicked him in the midriff, firing his bolter one-handed into his chest. Explosions ripped across the Warmaster's breastplate, and the amber eye at its centre split down the middle. Horus caught the bolter between the talons of his gauntlet, a twist of the wrist, and the weapon snapped just behind the magazine. Horus stepped inside Tarkon's guard and took hold of his gorget. Tarkon stabbed with his gladius. Horus felt blood well from the cut. He lifted Tarkon from the deck as though he was a child and clubbed his fist into the centurion's chest. The impact drove him back through his men, felling them like corn before the scythe. Horus kept going, sometimes bludgeoning, sometimes disemboweling. Gore boiled on his talons, clotted on Worldbreaker. Dripped from the cracked amber eye upon his breast. He pushed into the Ultramarines, surrounded on all sides by transhuman warriors, honorable men who, only a short few years ago, would have called him Lord. They might have balked at his naked ambition, resented his appointment to Warmaster over their own Primarch, but still they loved and respected him. And now he had to kill them. They stabbed and shot, undaunted in the face of the might of the demigod in their midst. Blades scored furrows in his armor, bolt shells exploded, fire and fury surrounded the Warmaster. Against so many sublime warriors, even a Primarch could be brought down. Primarchs were functionally immortal, but they weren't invulnerable. People often forgot the difference. In a fight like this, the skill was to find the moments of stillness, the places between the blades and bullets. A chain blade sailed past his head. Horus removed its owners. Bolter shells ricocheted from his thigh plate. Horus punched his taloned fist through a warrior's hearts and lungs, always in motion, talons and mace killing with every stroke. 23 seconds later, the transit was a charnel house. Hundreds dead and every drop of blood wrung to paint the walls. Horus let out a cathartic breath. He felt someone approach and reined in a violent reaction.
"Falcus," said Horus, "get me the centurion's gladius."
The blast door to the command bridge was bulging inwards. The first blow had hit it like a titan's fist. The second buckled the metal and tore its upper corners from the frame. Lord Admiral Brython Semper stood with his dueling sabre unsheathed and the captain's twin-barreled boyer held loosely at his thigh. The upper barrel was an ancient beam weapon, a volkite, some called it, the underslung portion a one-shot plasma jet. It was a space marine killer, but could it kill a Primarch? Would he get the chance to find out? He'd be lucky to get even a single shot off with the boyer. Perhaps 100 people stood with him. Surveyor readers, aides, juniors, scriveners and battle techs, deckhands. None were combat trained worth a damn. Only a single squad of armsmen with shot cannons and the 9 Thalaxii Ferox had any hope of inflicting real damage. Banks of acrid smoke filled the bridge, and the only light was from a few stuttering lumens. The hololith had failed, and hydraulic fluids drizzled from ruptured pipework. Nothing remained of the command network. The voice crackled with screams.
"We'll make them pay for this, Admiral," said a crewman.
Semper couldn't see who. He wanted to say something suitably heroic, a valedictory speech to inspire his crew and earn them an ending worthy of the Guardian of Aquinas. All that filled his thoughts were the last words Vitus Salicard said to him. "We are killers, reapers of flesh. You must never forget that." The blast door finally tore free of its mounting and fell into the bridge like a profane monolith toppled by iconoclasts. A towering figure was revealed, a giant of legend, haloed by flames of murder and dripping with blood. A mantle of stiffened fur wreathed the war god's shoulders. His armor was the color of night and gleamed with the fire of dying empires. Semper had expected a charge, bursts of gunfire. The god threw something at his feet. Semper looked down. An ultramarine's gladius, the blade coated in vivid crimson. Its handle was wrapped in red leather. The hemispherical pommel was ivory, inlaid with a wreath-enclosed company number. "That belonged to Proximo Tarkon," said the god. "Centurion of the 9th Division, Battle Group 2, Legiones Astartes Ultramarines." Semper knew he should spit in the traitor's face, or at least raise his weapon. His crew deserved to be led into their last battle by their captain. Yet the idea of raising a weapon against a being so perfectly formed, so sublime, seemed abhorrent. He knew he faced a betrayer, an enemy, the enemy. Yet Semper felt enraptured by his sheer magnificence. The War Master took a step onto the bridge, and it took every ounce of Semper's willpower not to kneel. "Proximo Tarkon and his warriors faced me without fear, for they were trained by my brother on Macrag, and such men are uniquely skilled at death-dealing. But Proximo Tarkon and his warriors could not stop me." Semper tried to answer the War Master, but he couldn't long hold his gaze, and his tongue felt leaden.
"Why are you telling me this?"
he managed at last.
"Because you fought honorably," said the War Master, "and you deserve to know how futile it would be to waste your lives in pointless defiance at this point."
Semper felt the paralyzing awe he'd felt of the War Master diminish in the face of so arrogant a statement. He wished he'd had the chance to return to Cypra Mundi and watch his son grow to manhood. He wished the blast shutters weren't down over the viewing bay, so he might see the stars one last time. He wished he could be the one to kill this god. Semper lifted his dueling saber to his lips and kissed its blade. He thumbed the activation clasp on the boyer gun.
"For the Imperium!"
shouted Semper as he charged the War Master. Horus stood in the midst of carnage, 111 people dead in less than a minute. A corpse lay at the War Master's feet, divided into long sections by a diagonal stroke of energized talons.
"Who was he?"
asked Mortarion, his holographic form wavering on the temporary floating disc projector the Mechanicum had rigged. Beyond the Death Lord's image, faint impressions of Death Shroud could be seen, trailing their master like ghosts. The disc maintained a constant distance of 3 meters from Horus, closer than Falcus Kyber would have liked, even for a hologram, but exceptions had to be made for the Primarch's brothers.
"Lord Admiral Brython Semper," said Horus. "A Lord Admiral?"
said the Death Lord.
Looks like you were right. Our father really does value this world.
Horus nodded absently and knelt by Brython's corpse. A pointless death, said Horus.
He tried to kill you,
pointed out Falca Skyber, taking position at the War Master's right hand.
He didn't have to.
Of course he did, said Kyber. You know he had to. He might actually have surrendered until you said what you did at the end.
Horus rose to his full, towering height.
You think I wanted him to attack me?
Of course, said Kyber, puzzled the War Master would even ask.
Tell me then, why did I provoke the Lord Admiral?
Kyber looked up at Lupercal and saw a fractional tilt to the corner of his mouth. A test, then. Axamund had warned him that the War Master liked to play these little games. Kyber took a moment to marshal his response. Quick answers were for Axamund or Nocturne.
Because the Lord Admiral's name would have been reviled forever if he'd surrendered his vessel, offered Kyber. He'd fought hard and done all that honor demanded, but to surrender would have cursed his line from here till the end of time.
Mortarion grinned.
What's this? Insight from the Widowmaker?
Kyber shrugged, hearing derision.
I'm a simple warrior, my lord, he said. Not a stupid one.
Which is why I was pleased when Ezekiel put your name forward for the Mournival, said Horus. Things have become complex, Falcus, far more so than I thought, and far quicker. It's good to have a simple man at your side in such times, don't you agree, brother?
If you say so,
grunted Mortarion, and Kyber smiled. The gesture was so unfamiliar to him, he didn't at first know what his facial muscles were doing. The War Master placed a hand on his shoulder and walked him to the command throne of Guardian of Aquinas. The hololith had been returned to life, painting a grim portrait of Molech's future.
Tell me what my simple warrior sees, Falcus, said Horus. You're Mournival now, so you need to be more than just a shock trooper, simple or otherwise.
Kyber studied the shimmering globe of Molech. He took his time, and it was an effort not to advocate a full drop-pod assault immediately. How long was it since he'd had to employ anything other than the directness of breacher tactics?
The battle for space is won, said Kyber. The weapon platforms are ours, and the enemy ships are crippled or captured.
Tell me about the orbitals, asked Horus.
They're maneuvering to new positions, but we can't rely on them.
Why not?
Molech's adepts will be retasking the surface missile batteries to destroy the platforms. We'll take out some before they fire, but they were never intended to resist fire from the ground. At best, we'll get a few salvos away before the platforms are inoperable.
Hardly worth the effort to capture them, said Mortarion.
A few salvos from orbit is worth a whole battalion of legionaries, said Kyber. Kalth taught the 17th Legion that much.
He's right, brother, said Horus, zooming in from the views of Molech's orbital volume to its planetary zones. Four continental masses, only two of which were inhabited or defended to any degree, one heavily industrialized, the other pastoral. The Sons of Horus and the Death Guard forces would direct the main thrust of their attack upon the latter continent. Molech's primary seat of command lay within a mountain valley at a city named for Horus himself, Lupercalia. The War Master jabbed a talon at Lupercalia and traced a route across the continent over verdant plains, past cities, through mountain valleys, before ending up at a ruined citadel on a storm-lashed island virtually clinging to the coastline.
The Fulgurine Path, said Horus. That's the road I need to walk. And this citadel is where we'll begin.
And the rest of Molech, said Mortarion.
Unleash your Eater of Lives, ordered Horus. Lay waste.
Loken moved down the corridor with Bror Tearfinger to his left, Ares Wojtek to his right. He kept the shot cannon pulled in tight, looking down the unfamiliar iron sight as he moved smoothly into the drive chamber. He hadn't used a weapon like this since his time in the Scout Auxilia, but firing bolt weapons aboard a thin-skinned starship was generally frowned upon. Tarnhelm wasn't a large ship, so when Banu Rasua informed Loken she detected an unauthorized biosign during her final calculations for Mandeville translation, it didn't take long to narrow down the potential hiding places in which a stowaway could be hiding. While the rest of the Pathfinders secured the frontal areas of the ship, Loken, Tearfinger, and Wojtek swept back to the drives.
"Someone from that grim fortress, orbiting Titan?" asked Wojtek, his upper servo arms clicking with restraint cuffs. "That Oliton girl you saw?"
Loken shook his head.
"No, it's not her."
"Then a warp thing?" offered Tearfinger. "Something shat out by the War Master's Maleficarum?"
The former Space Wolf had eschewed a shot cannon in favor of his combat blade and knotted leather cestus gauntlet. Its night-bladed claws tapped on his thigh plate in a rhythmic tattoo. None of them answered Tearfinger's question. Each of them knew too much to lightly dismiss such speculation. The drive chamber was the only place left on the ship where anyone could realistically conceal themselves, but so far, they had found nothing. The engine spaces were elliptical in section, with a raised floor and suspended ceiling, flanked on both sides by two enormous cylinders that thrummed with barely contained power. Looped cables encircled narrowed portions of the main drives, and hard-wired calculus servitors with shimmering eyes mumbled binaric plainsong. A central nave ended at a communion altar, at which stood the unmoving figure of the nameless Mechanicum adept monotasked with overseeing the engine functions. Sitting cross-legged before the altar was a bearded, tattooed warrior in the unadorned plate of the Knight's Errant. He was assembling the components of a bolter he'd spread out on the deck. Loken lowered his shot cannon as the warrior looked up with a disappointed shake of his head.
"What," said Loken, "are you doing?"
"I got bored of waiting for you to find me," replied Severian.